Hello and welcome to another episode of the Three Bid League podcast. As always, I am Tyler, joined by Matt. And for the second time this year, we are joined by a very special guest, college basketball's hungriest insider, John Rothstein. Thanks for joining us again, John.
Guys, great to be with you.
Yeah, so right now you are in your tour de force of training camps around college basketball. Great to see that COVID did not keep you from being able to do that this year. You just recently went to LaSalle and St. Joe's earlier this week, and you're kind of just going up and down the East Coast. So do you set a goal of how many different teams you want to reach? Are you more so looking at specific teams? How do you kind of start to plan this out?
Yeah, I mean, I think I usually normally hit between 30 and 40 schools in a given preseason. I think because I obviously live in the Northeast that I'm obviously going to always try and hit those schools. And then, you know, depending on what assignments I have for CBS and other different maybe, you know, opportunities I have to speak or something like that during the preseason, I try and work other visits around that. So I was out in California for a little bit of a getaway, but I made sure to get to Santa Barbara practice because they could win the Big West. You know, saw obviously USC, Loyola Marymount, spent some time at UCLA. So I've always been one to try and maximize time as much as possible. You know, President Kennedy had a great quote, "You can use time. We must use time as a tool, not as a couch." And I think that's really how you have to operate when you're thinking about the preseason.
So, and obviously you don't have to name specific schools, but you are certainly one of the best known college basketball journalists right now. Have you ever ran into a situation where you reached out to try to go to a practice and a coach basically shut the door on you, or even the opposite where you have coaches reaching out saying, "Hey, John, can you show up? It'll help give us a little bit of publicity."
Yeah, coaches are reaching out every day, especially when they know that, you know, that, you know, I'm out and about. And it's not obvious. I wish I could get to 350 practices, you know, but I'm only one person, you know. I need to cover as much ground as possible. I had last night, you know, a non-Division I school reach out and try to get me to come to practice. But I do have, you know, other things too, and I'm not obviously out of practice, but I have to deal with like anybody else. But to answer the first part of your question too, there are some coaches who just aren't always comfortable, maybe even at the start of practice, with having an open practice. So 5 or 6 years ago, that really, really frustrated me. But I think I get it a little bit now. When you get older, you always get a little bit wiser, and you understand that, you know, some coaches just aren't comfortable with, you know, opening the doors, which is fine. Everybody has, you know, the right to run their own program.
Yeah, everybody knows a certain veteran ACC coach has operated that way for a while, so not surprising to hear that others have too. But more A-10 specific, as we mentioned, you went to LaSalle and St. Joe's, did the Philly back-to-back earlier this week, and you were firing up the Twitter machine with your thoughts. Anything kind of lingering still in your mind that maybe you didn't cover, or maybe do you want to go deeper about a guy like Eric Reynolds who you were really talking up?
It's funny you said that, Tyler, because that's where I was going to go. You know, I think Eric Reynolds is going to be one of the best freshmen in the Atlantic 10. I think Eric Reynolds is a player that a lot of power conference teams missed on. I mean, this is a guy that I think doesn't have a chance to just start for St. Joe's, but I wouldn't be shocked if he averaged between 10 and 12 points and got 4 or 5 assists. Just a really good feel, really confident for a freshman. And now you put him next to Jordan Hall, and you have a pretty formidable perimeter for St. Joe's. Like, I don't think St. Joe's is on track to be a top-tier team in the Atlantic 10, but this is the best rendition of a roster that they've had so far under Billy Lang. Obviously, St. Joe's has played a lot of five-out the last 2 years. They've solidified their front line a little bit with two transfers, Ajika Obinna, obviously, from Vanderbilt, and Charles Coleman from East Carolina. So they're not a top-tier team in the Atlantic 10, in my opinion, but they're better than they've been.
Yeah, and that was actually something that surprised me quite a bit. I noticed that when you tweeted out your projected top 20 or top five, starting five for them, you had Obinna and Charles Coleman starting together, two big men, which is something that St. Joe's, we really haven't seen a lot from them the last few years. So do you think they're going to change their style to get more use out of those guys?
Well, Matt, it surprised me too. I mean, the first thing you do when you get into a practice is obviously start, you know, chatting up with the coaching staff and other people in the gym to find out, you know, who's playing well. And obviously, you know, the theme right now is that St. Joe's has great size. Now, in the preseason, as the next 6 and 7 weeks progress, they may go away from that. They may go back to obviously having, you know, Taylor Funk at the four. But, you know, this type of size, especially when you have a 6'8" two guard in Jordan Hall and a guy that's going to handle the ball in Jordan Hall, you know, as much as he is, he's going to initiate offense. He's going to do things like that. You're looking right now at a front line in the Atlantic 10. If they go with that lineup, that could have 6'2", 6'8", 6'9", 6'9", and 7 foot, or 6'11". I mean, that's pretty formidable in the Atlantic 10.
Yeah, and this is a team that, quite frankly, has been on the small side the last few years. Yes. They've been playing, trying to force Funk in at the five, which, as we've talked about extensively on this pod, led to some defensive disasters.
Oh, no question.
So, do you see them getting better on that side of the ball this year with that bigger front line?
Well, you know, I was talking with somebody at practice yesterday, and I said, like, if you're going to play Taylor Funk, Ajiko Obinna, and Charles Coleman, you have to have a zone because your lineup right now is looking, from a personnel standpoint, more like Syracuse than a team in the Atlantic 10. So I would think that that's something that Billy Lang would definitely work on the next 6.5 weeks.
So little nugget to watch out for as we move into the early season. In terms of LaSalle, we've posed this question. I know we posed it to Dr. John Giannini a few weeks ago. We've asked it to our buddies at the Golis Standard every time they've been on here. Do you see LaSalle having a star this year? Are you on the Jameer Brickish train like everybody else, or could it be someone else?
It's an interesting complement of players that they've assembled, because I look at, you know, LaSalle, and I talked to Ashley Howard about this week. You know, they felt really, really good, I think, about the progress they made between year one and year two of his regime. Then, obviously, you're trying to integrate Jack Clark back in the mix, who had some health issues. There was no offseason. There was no preseason to get those reps in training and nutrition to really cement the foundation for a good season. So then you don't feel as good with the way you played in year three, because obviously it was a disjointed season because of COVID. You know, I look, and I know what you're saying about Jameer Brickus, but I look at LaSalle 3, 4, 5, and I see a guy in Josh Nickelberry, who again was good enough to get a scholarship from the University of Louisville coming out of high school. He's a high major player. Jack Clark, to me, when healthy, is a high major player. Like, people in power conferences would take him. And Clifton Moore started at Indiana. And I think if you look at LaSalle's program history, especially the team under John Giannini that went to the Sweet 16 in 2013, part of the fabric of that is power conference transfers. Tyrone Garland came from Virginia Tech. Ramon Galloway came from South Carolina. So LaSalle has experienced guards. That's a good thing. LaSalle has high major talent at 3, 4, and 5. So again, similar to St. Joe's, I don't know if they're ready to challenge the VCUs, the St. Bonaventures, the Richmond, the St. Louis's, but I think they're better than they've been and have the chance to finish in the middle of the pack. It's an interesting league when you look at it, because I think there's four teams that are really, really standing out at the top. And then I think, you know, 5 through 13, it's really, really close.
So you couldn't have let us in more perfectly into our next question. Obviously, St. Joe's and LaSalle will be fun this year, but you have them in the bottom half of your preseason predictions. Mm-hmm. So looking at the top of the league, I think all three of us here got a stake in the A-10 being good. You started your offseason preview saying the A-10 is not a mid-major. Mm-hmm. We got to defend our podcast name. So beyond St. Bonaventure and Richmond, who are basically everyone's 1 and 2, how does this league get to a third bid this season?
Well, it's a great question. And I think, you know, it's a kind of a cookie cutter answer, but it all comes down to the non-conference portion of the schedule. What is VCU going to do in the battle for Atlantis? Mike Rhodes, I think, has proven and has earned the respect now that as long as he's coaching VCU, they're a perennial contender for the NCAA tournament. I didn't expect them to get a bid last year, and then I watched what they did at the Sanford Pentagon by beating, obviously, some of the teams they beat out there, Utah State, Memphis, and all of a sudden our whole perception of them changed. And I know they don't have Ace Baldwin. I think Marcus Shuonis can do the job, obviously, until Ace comes back. I think that was a really underrated pickup. So I think VCU is a perennial NCAA tournament contender. And then I look at, you know, St. Louis as being an unsung team in a lot of different ways, because, you know, Javonte Perkins is a player, and I'm going to say this more and more in the coming weeks, that has a chance to become a national name and a star in the 21-22 season. Not that he wasn't last season, but all of a sudden, if you're Travis Ford, you're going to be in a situation where you don't have to worry about getting Jordan Goodwin and Hassan French touches. Now, all of a sudden, Javonte Perkins is regularly featured. This is a guy, I think, that can average, you know, 19 to 20 points a game in his sleep. He's not just a really good offensive player, he's an efficient offensive player. And there's also players back around him. Gibson Jimerson's back. Fred Thatch is back. Yuri Collins is now a veteran point guard. And an under-the-radar transfer, just because of his size and girth and physicality, is Francis Okoro, who, again, started his career at Oregon. So those non-conference games, and it sounds like a cookie-cutter answer, are going to be the key for the Atlantic 10. And, guys, this is one of my big frustrations, I think, with the direction that the league has went in the last 5 to 7 years, is that, and I'm, you know, been open about this, the Atlantic 10 is not a power conference league, and it's not a mid-major league. But part of the reason why the Atlantic 10 was able to generate the buzz that it generated, you know, 8-9 years ago, was because it had 16 league games, not 18 league games. So you look at what happens then, you have more flexibility to schedule non-conference games to manipulate your net, just like it used to manipulate your RPI. When you were at 16 league games, you had 5 teams in 2013 get in. You had 6 teams in 2014 get in. That's as many in 2014 as the ACC. And ever since the Atlantic 10 went back to 18 league games, the league has just really shrunk its opportunity to get more teams in the NCAA tournament. You look at what's happened in the West Coast Conference. 2 years ago, before COVID canceled the NCAA tournament, Gonzaga, BYU, and St. Mary's weren't just all going to the NCAA tournament. They were going as single-digit seeds. The Atlantic 10 does not have a Gonzaga, but the Atlantic 10, top to bottom, is a better basketball league than the WCC. So the movement, in my opinion, if we're going to shove all our poker chips in the middle of the table, the movement needs to be for the Atlantic 10 to go back to 16 league games, find a way to be more creative, to create opportunities for these programs to get higher caliber games. And it's not going to be a challenge with the Mountain West. And third, and this might lead to something you guys want to get to later in the podcast, but I feel like I'm on a little bit of a roll right now. I don't understand now how people from the Atlantic 10 office are not on the next Acela train to Philadelphia to try and do everything they can to get Temple back into the conference. Temple right now, with what we're seeing in the AAC, with Houston, Cincinnati, and Central Florida all headed to the Big 12, Temple right now, in my opinion, is in a struggle that's a daily struggle to get its brand back. The Temple that we all knew and we all grew up with John Chaney going to 5 Elite 8s, with Temple being arguably one of the top 2 or 3 non-power conference programs in the country, that Temple is gone. And even the Temple that we saw with Fran Dunphy when they were the flagship program of the Atlantic 10, that feels like, you know, another lifetime ago. Temple right now is in a struggle for its brand. The way to get its brand back is in the Atlantic 10. And I'll say this, I fully understand that college football, you know, drives realignment, but the front porch of that university is the men's and women's basketball program. Those two programs are what's going to obviously drive people to Temple University. If they can find another home for football, just like UConn did, it would well serve them to go back to the Atlantic 10. And all of a sudden, if you're Temple and you can go back to the Atlantic 10, and the Atlantic 10 at the top has Temple, VCU, Dayton, St. Louis, St. Bonaventure, pretty good basketball league.
So we teased a realignment conversation with you before we started, so we might as well jump in now. And so I will ask you, because I personally have wanted to champion the idea of poaching not only Temple, but also Wichita State from the American. And maybe you kick 2 teams out, maybe you just go to 16. I don't really care. If you get those two, they improve your conference. So what do you think would be the ideal move for the A-10 right now?
You know, Wichita State makes a lot of sense. I will be honest with you. The travel portion of of Wichita State coming to play in a predominantly East Coast league, I could understand why there would be trepidation on that from their part. But again, you have to obviously swing big when you're thinking about realignment. And look, we're learning this right now. In realignment, you're proactive or you're reactive. And I, because I obviously have a fondness for the Atlantic 10, because I know it's a really, really good basketball league, I want to see, you know, the league get back to what it was and really become, you know, one of the more formidable basketball leagues in the country. But, you know, I think, you know, the Wichita State thought process makes sense. I mean, West Virginia does the travel in the Big 12. So, I mean, I think it's something you have to kick around. I don't know if that would excite them as much as others, but the American Athletic Conference right now is on the verge and headed towards being what Conference USA was when John Calipari was at Memphis and Louisville, Marquette, and Cincinnati left to go to the Big East. That's where the American Athletic Conference was. And that's something that really nobody can deny. And I think another thing that, you know, would make me scared, especially if I'm Temple, is if there's more expansion, one of the next targets that's going to go and is going to be a high target is going to be Memphis. And then what are you left with? I mean, you're looking right now, if you're Aaron McKee, if you're Temple and you're trying to get people excited, you're talking about a season ticket package with all due respect to these teams that's going to include a Big Five package, which is great. And then you're going to have South Florida, SMU, Tulsa, Tulane, and the list goes on and on. How does that get people in Philadelphia in the Northeast excited? It doesn't.
Well, sadly, as we know, and as you mentioned, football drives everything. So we hope to see.
Tyler, I will say this, though. I think UConn changed that. And I know that Temple has had moderate success in football after Rule obviously left to go and is now, you know, in the National Football League. And I totally get that. But my thing is this, you know, I understand that is something that they've gotten excitement about from, I think, a very limited, you know, place on campus. But at the same time, Temple needs to understand this. And I said this, you know, to key members of Temple's administration when I was on campus earlier this week. Temple never signed up to join the American Athletic Conference when it left the Atlantic 10. It signed up to join the old Big East, and the Big East split. And obviously the Catholic schools went in a different direction, but this is a critical time. And if I'm the Atlantic 10, I don't understand how you're not doing everything you can to get that brand back into your conference. Because, I mean, let's face it, if Temple comes to the Atlantic 10, you guys might have to change the name of your podcast, the Forbid League.
Well, the last Sounds time they were in the conference was the year that they did get six bids. So
I think the last year was it was 12-13, the Khalif Wyatt team that almost beat Indiana. Well, yeah. You bring up a really good point there too, because think about that. And this is when I think the A-10 was at its peak. Xavier and Butler go to the Big East. Temple goes to the AAC. And in 2014, the league still gets six in. That shows you how strong the Atlantic 10 was.
Yeah, I mean, that was a crazy time for the conference. We had teams like UMass and GW especially. Yeah. I think that's the last time they made the tournament. And
we're going way deep into the archives, but this is what we do. We kibitz about college basketball. We're going way deep into the archives, but in that 2014 NCAA tournament, you had a GW team in an 8-9 game against Memphis. GW had a regular season win that year, okay, over Creighton with Doug McDermott, who was a 3-seed. Then you look, obviously, at some of the other teams that, you know, made the bracket. You know, you had a St. Joe's team that took UConn overtime when UConn won a national championship. And Dayton, as an 11-seed, went to the Elite Eight. I mean, and again, I think if you make a couple of tweaks with the Atlantic 10's format, if you can go back to 16 league games, if you can make a push to add Temple, and again, do something to, you know, find a way to get more excitement about your conference in November and December. I mean, I feel like right now the Atlantic 10 is kind of like a car that really needs a good detail. It needs to be spruced up a little bit. We need to obviously get more air in the tires, and you've got to fight, I think, not just really for more NCAA tournament bids, but national relevance.
And the TV contracts.
Yep. Tends to be important these days.
Absolutely.
So I guess one other kind of main topic, since we're talking about conference realignment, obviously football drives a lot. I mean, it all kind of started with Oklahoma and Texas announcing they're going to move to the SEC. And then you've got the Big Ten, Pac-12, and ACC talking about potentially an alliance. So yeah. A lot of these moves are driven by the big Power Five football conferences. Sure. I guess my question to you, do you think in the long run, is this something that could hurt the non-football conferences in basketball? Or do you think there's a chance the A-10 could maybe stand out as being one of the better, or still being one of the better non-football conferences? Because right now it seems like it could be kind of concerning that, you know, for those non-major football conferences.
Yeah, I think you look at this scenario right now, and I think the great divide between the haves and the have-nots. And that's just a fact of life that everybody has to brace in intercollegiate athletics. If you're not in a power conference right now, you are on the outside of the party looking in. And that's just a fact of life. And it's something that, again, you really can't debate at this juncture. And when you really, really look moving forward, I think, you know, you talked about the alliance. If all of a sudden a power conference team from the ACC, the Big Ten, or the Pac-12 knows they have a built-in opponent in each of those leagues, well, you're 22 high major games. Then all of a sudden you're going to play in an MTE and you're going to play in 2 and 3 games. So where, again, is the Atlantic 10 or a conference like that going to have opportunities to win games in the non-conference schedule? You're not. It's a constant, constant battle for relevancy. And again, it's something that I think needs to be handled head-on, daily. And I think, you know, a big step for that, I think, would be increasing, obviously, the visibility and the brand names in your league. And that starts with Temple.
So we'll take it back here to this season moving forward, because obviously one of the best things that the conference can do for their brand is just play some great basketball and Absolutely. Hopefully win some non-conference games. But as we kind of look ahead and start to put together our own projections, the last few years we've seen the Player of the Year, Bones Highland, Obi Toppin, and John Axel Goodmanson were all like this. They were all stars coming in, but none were exactly players who were being put on people's preseason first team all conference. Right. So outside of your first team right now, which is Gilliard, Lofton, Perkins, Hall, and I'm blanking on your
Oshun,
fifth guy.
Oshun, right?
And Oshun Oshunahi, who could you see as a potential sleeper to be the star of the A-10 this season?
Great question. You know, there's so many different, you know, theories out there, I think, that we could throw out right now because this is only September. You know, I think when you have guys who are consistently, I think, in winning situations, they're going to have a chance to augment their presence. So what I mean by that is, would it, you know, shock me if we saw somebody at VCU come to the forefront, not like Bones Highland, but make obviously a big push? Would a Jameer Watkins surprise you if he really took a big step because he's so talented? No, I mean, I also think, you know, somebody else too, because of how unique his game is Grant Golden, because of the way he kind of operates like a point guard at the most important part of the floor. But I'm saying this right now, and I want to make sure this is on the record. The guy right now who I think is not just going to be a star in the Atlantic 10, but a star nationally and will become a national name, is Tyler Burton from Richmond. Tyler Burton is somebody who inherited major minutes for the Spiders last year when Nick Sherrod went out of the lineup. I know that we're all going to talk about the experience and the guys coming back for Richmond, but the guy who has the best long-term potential is Tyler Burton. So there's a name that I would give you that I think, you know, has a chance to explode, not just in the A-10, but nationally. Let's continue to go through it for a second. You know, this is somebody, again, who comes from a higher power conference. Tumani Kamara from Georgia, who's going to be at Dayton. He's a guy who, again, is going to be counted on to anchor that front court and be a major player for Dayton. Put him on your list. What about Hyungjoon Lee at Davidson, or the guy who's going to be alongside him up front, and Samuel Meninga? When I see Samuel Meninga play for Davidson, I think an Atlantic 10 version of Mitch McGarry. He is that type of a game. He's not Mitch McGarry, but in this conference, he could be a Mitch McGarry of the Atlantic 10. And then, you know, we could go up and down the line and continue to find guys. We've touched on St. Joe's. We've touched on LaSalle. I think, you know, there's some really good, you know, guards for Matt McCall at UMass. Kim English, the newly minted coach at George Mason, got a very underrated transfer nationally into Sean Schwartz, who was a good scorer in the Pac-12. So I think there's a number of guys who can come to the forefront. But I do think this, the guys who are going to get the most attention, who are going to be the guys who are on the teams that are in that top four and five in the league. And I think, you know, we'll see obviously the teams that we've mentioned being that. I would also keep an eye too, and this is, I think, interesting too, on what happens at Rhode Island, because the caliber of player in that program reeks of power conference caliber. Ish Leggett, who I know you guys are fond of, I think we'll have a major, major jump. The Mitchell twins are power conference caliber. Jeremy Shepard is another player who is an underrated player. So I would keep an eye on some of those guys as well. But if you're asking me, out of the quartet of St. Louis, St. Bonaventure, VCU, and also Richmond, the guy in that group that I would watch is Tyler Burton, who's not on the first team.
Yeah, Burton kind of taking over that Blake Francis role, and he will have the chance to get him to get some good shots with both Jacob Gilliard and the aforementioned fulcrum Grant Golden around him. So I love that pick. And Tumani Kamara is my favorite transfer coming into the conference this year. So I love to hear that you are high on him too.
Absolutely.
So before we wrap things up here, well, I guess we were going to ask you about your favorite transfers heading into the league. You just mentioned Kamara and Schwartz. Anyone else that you want to throw in? Because you are far more plugged in nationally than we are.
Just for transfers to the Atlantic 10?
Yeah, guys who could potentially be all-conference guys.
Deshaun Schwartz was a great get for George Mason. A great get. That's an incredible get right there. I think if we look at the other guys who we're not looking at from a transfer perspective, Rashad Williams at Oakland, you know, who is now going to be at St. Louis. I think him and Francis DeForo will add, you know, something. They'll be in Travis Ford's rotation for sure. You know, we touched on Marcus Shuonis. Jimmy Nichols is also going to be at VCU. Nichols was at Providence last season. As I continue to go through the list right now in my head, you know, there's a guy who's going to be at UMass, Trent Buttrick, who was a role player at Penn State. He can kind of be the Grady Eifert of the Atlantic 10. If you're looking for an under-the-radar glue guy to put on your radar, might be about 9 or 11 people who get that reference, but, you know, this is obviously only September. And as we're continuing to go through the league, you know, we touched on Josh Nickelberry at LaSalle. I'm trying to think of anybody else, you know, of note from a transfer perspective.
I'll interject and say, how about Jordan Nesbitt? Because the St. Louis fans got mad that I didn't write about him last week.
Jordan, again, somebody who comes from pedigree. I think there's a good argument to be made for him as well. Yeah, and I also think, you know, Kobe Elvis at Dayton from DePaul is a high, high level talent. Has a chance, I think, to be a, you know, a good player in the Atlantic 10. Reminds me a little bit of Doug Wiggins, who played for UConn briefly like 15 years ago and then transferred to UMass when Derek Kellogg was the coach. So, you know, I'm all about the obscure references, especially in September.
Well, it is September, and so we got to close it out with a little bit of fun here because it's not quite college basketball season yet. You have recently joined Cameo, and your profile picture is you with the late, great Regis Philbin.
Yes.
So if you can give us a little story time, how did you meet the legend Regis Philbin?
Regis did a show on Fox Sports 1, Crowd Goes Wild. And I think during the 2014 NCAA tournament, I went on as a guest. And, you know, even though I worked for CBS, I was allowed to go on as long as they said CBS on Fox. And we just, you know, had spent an afternoon together, chopped it up. And I will never forget spending that day with Regis. Rest in peace.
Yeah, and an all-time legend too, that, you know, we're pretty young, all of us, so we haven't seen Regis's whole career, but the points that we got to see were certainly enjoyable. So, John Rothstein, everybody can find your work on College Hoops Today. You fired out a great A10 preview back in July, I believe, if anybody missed that. You somehow managed to get a really good coach on your pod every week, so congrats to you on that. anyone in this doing this knows how hard that can be to pull those people in. Anywhere else that people should be looking for you at?
No, man, obviously, you know, once we start up on November 9th, you know, I'll be in the studio for CBS Sports and CBS Sports Network. And then obviously, you know, on Twitter, and, you know, make sure to follow and obviously subscribe to the College Hoops Today podcast on Apple Podcasts. We are the only college basketball podcast coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. And also on Instagram, I am at John.Rothstein, J-O-N.
Yep, we can't even, we're doing a pod in the offseason, but we can't even claim to come close to 52 weeks a year with a pod. Very impressive. Thank you for joining us once again, John Rothstein.
Thanks for having me, guys. Let's stay connected.
Thanks again to John Rothstein for joining us for this episode, and thank you for listening. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at 3BitLeaguePod and subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll have another episode coming out later this week with Anthony Morelli from A10 Talk and Noah Goldberg from ESPN Richmond, so stay tuned for that.